Bantam Doubleday Dell Audio Publishing presents Next, The Future Just Happened by Michael Lewis. When we look at revolutions, we find that the outward acts against the old order are invariably preceded by the disintegration of inward allegiances and loyalties. The images of kings topple before their thrones do. Peter L. Berger, Invitation to Sociology. When internet stocks began their free fall in February 2000, the internet was finally put in its proper place. Everyone at once forgot that the omniscient chairman of the U.S. Federal Reserve, Alan Greenspan, had said that the internet was changing the economy in ways that even he didn't fully understand. Or that Jack Welch, the CEO of General Electric, the closest thing to a multinational corporate monument, had said that the internet was the most important force to strike the global economy since the Industrial Revolution. Or that the world's largest software company, Microsoft, was still saying that it needed to reinvent itself as an internet business. Or that most large companies, even those that had nothing to do with high technology, were still frantically trying to figure out how to respond to the internet. All of a sudden, the internet was just another technology, less important than the steam engine, the cotton gin, the telegraph, or air conditioning. It was nothing more than a fast delivery service for information. That was what serious people who either had lost a lot of money in the late stages of the internet boom, or more likely failed to make it, like to say now. All the internet does is speed up information. That's all. Marshall McLuhan famously said that new technologies tend to become less visible as they become more familiar. The internet was now proving his point. It was as if some crusty old baron who had been blasted out of his castle and was finally having a look at his first cannon had said, "All it does is speed up balls. That's all." The profit-making potential of the internet had been overrated, and so the social effects of the internet were presumed to be overrated, but they weren't. It is wildly disruptive to speed up information, and speeding up information was not the only thing the internet had done. The internet had made it possible for people to thwart all sorts of rules and conventions. It wasn't just the commercial order that was in flux. Many forms of authority were secured by locks, waiting to be picked. At any rate, I found the material too rich to ignore. Working on a book about a man at the epicenter of the internet boom, I had stumbled upon a lot of disturbing internet-inspired events. Children who had used the new tool to become financial experts. Parents who had used it to cede the responsibility for knowing about the world. Big businessmen who had used it to transform themselves into enemies of the mass market. Antisocial technologists who had been encouraged by it to reinvent themselves as social theorists. The technology of the internet was far less interesting than the effects people were allowing it to have on their lives, and what these, in turn, said about those lives. What was happening on the internet buttressed a school of thought in sociology known as role theory. The role theorists argue that we have no self as such. Ourselves are merely the masks we wear in response to the social situations in which we find ourselves. The internet had offered up a new set of social situations, to which people had responded by grabbing for a new set of masks. What was true of people was seemingly also true of ideas, as capitalism itself suddenly appeared willing to take new risks with its identity. I had already seen enough of the identity free-for-all to know that it was deeply unsettling. I could only assume that there were many more disturbing internet-inspired events that I didn't know about, and that was the problem. By the spring of 2000, hundreds of millions of people were online. They had created billions and billions of web pages. The best internet search engines didn't reach more than about a fifth of these. The best internet search engines didn't even know how many web pages existed. There was no way I was going to be able to investigate this vast new social world by myself. I needed help looking around. Into the picture strolled the British Broadcasting Corporation. It turned out that the BBC had already set aside a pile of money to make a television series about the social consequences of the internet. This enabled them to hire a team of pro-surfers to help me scour the internet for telling examples of human perversion. When they found something worth seeing, they'd tell me about it. Then we'd all go out together and knock on the front doors of the people behind the events and see what they were like in the flesh. The British taxpayer had generously offered to fund an investigation. But of what? Certainly not the definitive catalog of the social consequences of the internet. It's far too early for that. In the long run, the internet will become invisible and ubiquitous, and no one will spend a minute thinking about its social effects any more than they now think about the social effects of electricity. What I was after was more like the internet consequences of society. People take on the new tools they are ready for and only make use of what they need, how they need it. If they were using the internet to experiment with their identities, it was probably because they found their old identities were inadequate. If the internet was giving the world a shove in a certain direction, it was probably because the world already felt inclined to move in that direction. When I realized this, I stopped worrying over the social consequences of the internet and began simply to watch what was actually happening on the internet. Inadvertently, it was telling us what we wanted to become. It had an odd way of doing this, however. After a few months on the road, I realized that I was spending a lot of my time chasing after children. This was new. I was accustomed to being younger than my subjects. All of a sudden, I was the weird old guy who hangs around outside the school gate and waits for the bell to ring. I was uneasy in this new role. It seemed a truly perverse way to waste a lot of time. Then I traveled to Finland and saw that there was a deeply serious commercial precedent for this unseemly interest in children. Oddly enough, a Finnish company, Nokia, had come to dominate the mobile phone business to the point where pretty much everyone now agreed that the Finns would be the first to connect mobile phones to the internet in a way that the rest of us would find necessary. If one day we all wound up walking around physically attached to the internet, and it seemed likely that at least some of us would, Nokia would be the immediate reason for it. Overnight, the Finns had gone from being celebrated mainly for their tendency to drink too much and then kill themselves, to being heralded as the geniuses who built the most advanced communications industry on the planet. They had done this in spite of being personally uncommunicative, the only people I have ever met who, as they became drunk, grew even more silent. The Finns were successful because they were especially good at guessing what others would want from their mobile phones. One big reason for this, or so the people at Nokia believed, was that they spent a lot of time studying children. The kids came to each new technology fresh, without preconceptions, and they picked it up more quickly. They dreamed up uses for their phones that, for reasons no one fully understood, never occurred to grown-ups. The instant text message, for instance. The instant message was fast becoming a staple of European corporate communication. To create an instant message, you punched it by hand into your telephone, using the keypad as a typewriter. On the face of it, this is not an obvious use of a telephone keypad. The difference between the number of letters in the alphabet and the number of keys on the pad meant you wound up having to type a kind of Morse code. The technique had been invented by Finnish schoolboys, who were nervous about asking girls out on dates to their face, and Finnish schoolgirls who wanted to tell each other what had happened on those dates as soon as it happened. They'd proved that if the need to communicate indirectly is sufficiently urgent, letters can be typed into a telephone keypad with amazing speed. 5.5 million Finns had sent each other more than a billion instant messages in the year 2000. The technique had spread from Finnish children to businessmen because the kids had taught their parents how to use their phones. Nokia employed anthropologists to tell them this. Finland had become the first nation on Earth to acknowledge formally the child-centric model of economic development. If you wanted a fast-growing economy, you needed to promote rapid technical change. And if you intended to promote rapid technical change, you needed to cede to children a strange measure of authority. The average 12-year-old Finn now owned a mobile phone, and it was widely assumed inside Nokia that one day every 7-year-old Finn would own a mobile phone. The 12-year-olds disapproved of this. They'd crinkle their foreheads and say that really, 7 was too young. They didn't understand that their futures depended on 7-year-olds having phones. If the 12-year-olds were able to transform business communication, who knew what the 7-year-olds might achieve? I don't want to dwell here on why children, and more generally childishness, plays such an important part in the story that follows. I'll dwell on that enough later. But it does seem to me that when capitalism encourages ever more rapid change, children enjoy one big advantage over adults. They haven't decided who they are. They haven't sunk a lot of psychological capital into a particular self. When a technology comes along that rewards people who are willing to chuck overboard their old selves for new ones, and it isn't just the internet that does this, biotechnology offers many promising self-altering possibilities, the people who aren't much invested in their old selves
Sample complete. Ready to continue?